Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Death notices. Rick Harris, 65, passed away at Altrua Hospital in Grand Forks, North Dakota on November the 8th, 2022. Rick attended Odessa High School, graduating with the class of 1975. Kathy Ramirez, age 70, of Odessa, died Saturday, November the 26th. Charlotte A. Smith, 81, of Odessa, died Sunday, November the 20th. Thelma Oletta Steele, age 91, of Odessa, passed away on Sunday, November the 27th. James Curtis White, 75, of Odessa, died Thursday, November the 24th. Billy Carl Evans, age 77, of Odessa, died Saturday, November the 26th, in Big Spring. Kobe Shame Ford, 41, of Odessa, died Friday, November the 18th. Lynette Joe Tucker Baez of Odessa passed away on Thursday, November the 17th.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. Patient testimonial. Early cancer screening saved my life twice. I was diagnosed in October of 2019 with breast cancer after a routine mammogram. I had a stage 1A invasive ductal carcinoma and a stage 1A invasive lobular carcinoma in my left breast. I had a lumpectomy followed by 36 radiation treatments. My mammogram, as of October 26th of this year, remains clear. I have bad seasonal allergies and I frequently cough. I started noticing a slight discomfort in my upper right chest when I coughed. I had a routine doctor appointment coming up and thought I should mention it since I've smoked most of my life. My doctor suggested a low-dose chest CT at Midland Health. The low-dose CT detected a nodule in the right apex, pointy upper part, of my lung. This was considered a lung RADS 4X, which is highly suspicious for cancer, and the radiologist recommended a biopsy. I went in for a biopsy, and the findings were stage 1A2 invasive adenocarcinoma, non-small cell lung cancer. This means the tumor was larger than 1 centimeter but less than 2 centimeters, and had not spread anywhere else. After discussion with my family, physicians, and prayers from many people in my life, on June 24th of this year, I had my right upper lobe of my lung removed. All of the cancer was removed, and by the grace of God, no chemo or further radiation would be needed. My name is Tina Shepherd. I am 64 years old, and I am a breast and lung cancer survivor. Due to early detection with routine mammograms and the low-dose CT lung cancer screening, regular checkups, and open discussions with my physicians. Early detection has saved my life twice. Breathing exercises to manage holiday stressors. Stressful situations are part of everyday life, but this time of the year seems to be stressful times four. Shopping, cooking, cleaning, entertaining can cause us to feel tired and frustrated because of all the things we think we must do. It can be difficult to see through the never-ending lists to find something to be thankful for or to celebrate. The World Wide Web is filled with suggestions for easy meals to prepare, lists to help us be organized, easy cook and freeze recipes to get a head start for the holidays, and maybe a few suggestions for having fun. At times, you may feel stressed because of the self-imposed grind we put ourselves through. Even having fun can be stressful. Healthy stress can help us get things done, meet deadlines, and accomplish the goals we set for ourselves. What we often do not realize is that our body's stress response naturally kicks in, causing rapid breathing, a racing heart, and a rising blood pressure. We just know that we do not feel well. Unchecked stress can lead to serious conditions such as hypertension, anxiety disorders, and addiction. The good news is that you can take control over your stress by practicing a simple and free exercise that science and thousands of years of practice have proven to be very effective. This exercise would be to take a breathing break instead of a smoke break. Following our controlled breathing exercises that can be done anywhere or anytime, you start to feel like stress is taking over and you are losing a sense of calm. 1. Box breathing. Inhale for a count of 4. Pause for a count of 4, exhale for a count of 4. Then pause for a count of four before beginning again. 2, 573 breathing. Simply follow a 573 pattern of inhaling for a count of 5, exhale for a count of 7, and pause for a count of 3. Begin again. 3, peace, pause, breathing. Close your eyes so you can visualize spelling out the word, quote, peace, end quote. Lengthen and deepen your breathing to follow this pace. P-E-A-C-E for inhale, same for pause, and same for exhale. Take care of yourself during this holiday season. If we can be of assistance, feel free to contact Samaritan at 432-563-4144. Daisy Award. MMH's Ortiz goes above and beyond in her role. Midland Health announced this week that Brianna Ortiz is the latest Daisy Award winner. The Daisy Award is an international nursing recognition program created to honor nurses who provide extraordinary compassionate care. Midland Memorial Hospital, MMH, is one of more than 4,900 healthcare facilities and schools of nursing worldwide that recognizes their nurses with this prestigious award. Brianna works in the critical care unit and was nominated for the prestigious Daisy Award by a patient's wife who was powerfully impacted by the care received from Brianna. The patient's wife wrote the following, quote, "My husband is a heart patient and hospitals are just scary to him to begin with. And then when the heart goes haywire, it's even that more intense. Bree introduced herself right away and got to know my husband. Every time she popped in, she had a smile on her face and a sense of calmness. She not only was so in tune with making sure my husband, the patient, was doing well and all his needs were taken care of, but she was of mine as well. She called me by my name and even noticed I'm a constant coffee drinker. Every time she'd see me in the hallway, she'd say, 'Are you doing all right? Do you need some fresh coffee? I can make it in a minute.' Unfortunately, my husband's hospital visits lately have been a little frequent, and we have always received great care at Midland Memorial. But Bree was above and beyond in her bedside manner, with just the right amount of witty remarks that made both my husband and I smile. Any questions we asked about his blood work, IVs, etc., she would answer right away, or if she didn't know the answer, she got it for us and relayed it promptly. Nursing, healthcare, etc., is such a selfless profession. Anyone in the medical field are our heroes. But we can't accurately describe, even in all the words we've already used, the exceptional care and exceptional comfort Bree brought to my husband and I while in her care for multiple days. Her intelligence is immense, her empathy is genuine. Both my husband's and my own heart are better because of her care." End quote. It is because of Brianna's compassionate and caring efforts that her patient experienced a level of care that exemplifies the impact nurses have in creating an environment where patients and families feel at home. Congratulations, Brianna Ortiz. Anyone in the facility can nominate a nurse, be it a patient or visitor, another nurse, physician, or any other staff member, anyone who experiences or observes extraordinary compassionate care being provided by a nurse. Have you recently had an extraordinary experience with a nurse at Midland Memorial Hospital? Please submit a Daisy Award nomination at the following link, https://www.midlandhealth.org/main/daisy-award-nomination-form, or use your smartphone to scan the QR code below. Avoid acid reflux after meals this holiday season. Getting reflux after a meal can leave a bad taste in the mouth, so don't let it ruin your meals this holiday season. A Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital gastroenterologist provides tips for the whole family on how to manage reflux symptoms and which foods to avoid. Quote, "Everyone experiences some degree of reflux throughout the day, which typically goes unnoticed," end quote, said Dr. Eric Chu, assistant professor of pediatrics, gastroenterology at Baylor, and pediatric gastroenterologist at Texas Children's Hospital. Quote, "But some people have reflux that causes complications like inflammation of the esophagus or bothersome symptoms such as pain, heartburn, or respiratory issues. We distinguish that as reflux disease," end quote. Reflux typically affects adults, but can also impact children. It is especially common in infants because of their size, Chu said, but it becomes less prevalent by the time children reach 12 to 18 months. In adolescence, the frequency of reflux begins to rise again until adulthood. Symptoms usually begin about 30 to 60 minutes after eating, according to Chu. If symptoms occur during the meal, they may be caused by something other than reflux, such as an issue with the swallowing process. In children who are too young to describe what they are feeling, it can be hard to determine if symptoms are related to reflux. Chu advises that children, quote, might feel like something is coming back up, or they may have a bad taste in their mouth. They also may complain of chest pain or feel like their throat is hot or burning, end quote. Certain foods may predispose a person to experience reflux. Spicy foods, citrus fruits, tomatoes, caffeine, chocolate, foods with a high fat content. Chu recommends lifestyle changes as a first step to combat reflux. Quote, try to cut back on acidic foods, carbonated or caffeinated beverages, and fatty foods that take longer to digest, end quote, he said. Quote, instead of eating large meals, try to eat smaller meals with snacks in between. Avoid eating anything close to bedtime when you'll be lying flat, end quote. If changes in diet and eating habits don't alleviate symptoms, Chu recommends talking to your physician about medications that could help. Antacids neutralize acid immediately and can help typical symptoms like heartburn or regurgitation. Acid blockers stop the production of acid and may be helpful for frequent episodes of reflux. Quote, antacids may not be helpful for atypical reflux symptoms like a sore throat or cough. So it's important to speak with your doctor first, end quote, Chu said. Quote, if you experience reflux more than a couple times a week, or if it causes other issues like weight loss or vomiting, I recommend seeing a gastroenterologist, end quote. Large meals during the holiday season can be especially challenging for people who suffer from reflux or reflux disease. Chu says that severe diet restrictions aren't necessary, but it's important to be aware of potential reflux triggers. Quote, I don't think anything absolutely needs to be off limits, but eat in moderation, end quote, Chu said. Quote, instead of taking a large portion of something that might trigger symptoms, take a smaller portion. You can also prepare by taking antacids to minimize symptoms, end quote. Strategies to break link between heart disease, diabetes. Heart disease remains a leading cause of death around the world, and diabetes is one of the risk factors for heart disease. Diabetes is a growing global health concern, with more than 422 million people living with this metabolic disorder, the majority of those with type 2 diabetes. Dr. Gacia Wemmel, a cardiologist at Mayo Clinic Healthcare in London, has long been researching the link between diabetes and heart disease. She says for people with diabetes, there are new treatment strategies. Through her research on diabetes and heart disease, Dr. Wemmel says she learned a lot about, quote, the role of chronic inflammation and insulin resistance as a mechanism that starts the process of atherosclerosis, end quote. And atherosclerosis can lead to coronary artery disease and heart attack. That's where diet and exercise can help. Quote, we have evidence and scientific data that support that weight reduction, improvement in blood pressure are very important strategies to reduce the risk of diabetes and, therefore, complications of diabetes and heart diseases, end quote, says Dr. Wemmel. New treatments and therapies are also available. Quote, we have, for the first time, developed glucose-lowering treatments that at the same time address the problem, the link between their diabetes and heart diseases, end quote, Dr. Wemmel says.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa Americans front page for Monday, November 28th. Testing narratives. UTPB professor goes after bias. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. John Fisher enjoys challenging established narratives, and the assistant professor of criminology at UTPB has done just that with an article titled Disproportionality Does Not Equal Racism. It was published in the Journal of Law and Criminal Justice, an open-source journal out of Wisconsin. Quote, my research interest is extremism, polarization, and hate, so I like testing narratives. In 2020, we had a narrative that police officers killed suspects based on race, so I tested that. Using the Fatal Force database found in the Washington Post, we ran a statistical analysis of every law enforcement use of fatal force against suspects to test whether or not the narrative was true that cops target people based on race or ethnicity. This was a project that I did with my research class, so we had 30 students involved, said Fisher, who is also a coordinator of the Criminal Justice Administration program. Christina Ritter, a graduate student at UTPB, helped him compile all the information and shares a byline with Fisher on the article. Quote, "But it was my entire research class that tested the theory or the idea that police used race as a determination. We found that they did not. 95% of the decedents, people killed by police, were either armed and or posed an immediate threat to the life of a police officer or a third party," Fisher said. In 2019, leading up to the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota, there were 1,003 people that were killed by police. Of that, 27% were African Americans, 47% were white, and the remaining was a mixture of everybody else. Quote, "If you stopped your research right there, you would say that, yes, disproportionality shows because the African American population only makes up 13% of the population, then they're disproportionately overrepresented. Our research, the research that we conducted, showed that there was no link or significant relationship between race and the decision to use fatal force. But just solely on disproportionality, you could make the claim that they're racist," Fisher said. 95% of the people killed in 2019 were armed with a weapon. 6 out of 10 were armed with a gun. The remaining 4 were armed with 10 other deadly weapons, whether it was an edged weapon like a knife, sword, machete, or a baseball bat. Quote, "There was one individual who had created his own flamethrower with wasp spray and a lighter. He was trying to burn police officers with that. That particular individual was white. Law enforcement statistically, or just by the bare numbers, kills many more white people than they do others. Just in the mere fact that they're killing 1,000 people a year, which is a horrible number in itself, but the race is not the determining factor. The determining factor is whether or not the suspect or the decedent is armed, and they're posing a threat. Those are the significant purposes of the significant influencers for police to use fatal force," he said. 5% of the people killed by police are unarmed. Quote, "They're going for their cell phone or reaching for their wallet. They're doing something other than reaching for a weapon. The police officer, in his perception, believes that they're going for weapons, so he shoots and kills them. Just about every one of those cases, the police officer has been prosecuted," Fisher said. He added that it is harder to convict police officers, and there is a lot made of qualified immunity. The test is, would other police officers facing the same situation take the same action, Fisher said. UTPB has a class taught by Richard Kickbush, associate professor and coordinator of the criminology program, on civil liability of making those decisions and the protections you have. Quote, "I know a lot of people like throwing a qualified immunity out there, but if your average police officers are not going to make the same decisions, you have no protection. And qualified immunity doesn't protect you. So when you're making a decision on the street, that decision that you have to make has to be reasonable," Fisher said. He added that it has to be the decision other officers would make in the same situation. Fisher got into the research because, as he said, he likes to test narratives, and the narrative out there is that they are systematically racist and they target racial minorities for excessive use of force. He used the Washington Post database to find out if the narrative was true. Quote, "And I found that the narrative was not true," Fisher said. He added that the conclusion was very controversial. The research students that worked with the project helped with the literature review and helped compile the data. He first sent it to the Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences Journal, which rejected it. Quote, "They said, this is just wrong," Fisher said. The Journal of Law and Criminal Justice, it's an open-source journal out of Wisconsin, and so they accepted it. I had to rewrite a lot and change some of the vocabulary to where some of the vocabulary wasn't as inflammatory. But other than that, they didn't have me change any of my conclusions or any other results. One reviewer said this is important and it needs to be shared, Fisher said. He added that there's a whole slew of accepted narratives that are being overturned and nobody likes it. Quote, "But in my world of extremism, polarization, and hate, stating that cops are racist is going to increase polarization and extremism, so I tested it to find out," Fisher said. Ritter said she was flattered to have the opportunity to work on Fisher's project. Quote, "Based on the media attention surrounding law enforcement's use of fatal force, I was interested in digging into the actual data as opposed to merely listening to opinions. I did not go into the project with a specific idea about what the data would look like," Ritter said in a text message. She added that she was hopeful their findings would be published because it contains such relevant information in light of the controversy surrounding law enforcement's use of fatal force. Quote, "Being published is a big deal, so I am grateful to have been a part of this project," Ritter said. Fisher has another article that's about to be published on Texas sheriff's perceptions of right-wing militias and their threat to domestic security. His sample on the study was rural sheriffs in counties of less than 200,000. Quote, "There's one sheriff that said, if I have a problem in my county and my deputies and myself can't handle that problem, I'm calling the militia," Fisher said. Another project he and his students are working on is gun violence in schools. He also presented a paper on lessons from Uvalde. He found out from that research that complacency is the biggest problem. Quote, "We need to be diligent. Every single person who has gone through a mass casualty event, there have been warning signs, and people have known that that's what they were going to do, and nobody responded. Because they just don't believe it," Fisher said.
Dear Dr. Roach, why is it every time I get my flu shot, I get an outbreak of vaginal herpes? And will taking Valtrex right after the flu shot make the shot not work? Dr. Roach's answer, herpes outbreaks, both oral and genital, can be associated with psychological or physical stress. A review of the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System shows a very few reports of genital herpes following influenza vaccine, so this does not seem to be a common issue. Valtrex is an antiviral medicine that works uniquely on herpes viruses. It will not affect the flu shot in any way.
This is the Dear Abby column. Wife seeks path forward after decades of abuse. Dear Abby, my husband of 30 years has always made me feel like I wasn't good enough for him. He would flirt with other women and say things to me about an ex-girlfriend he broke up with before marrying his first wife. I caught him private messaging her. He has told me 4 different times that we should separate. The first 3 times I cried about it. The last time he said it, I told him never to say that to me again. I have always tried my best to be a good wife to him. He's verbally abusive most of the time. When I see him coming home from work, my stomach ties in knots because I don't know what kind of mood he's in. He can be good at times, but it's not that often. I'm going to be 50, and I'm not sure if I want to live like this the rest of my life. Help, please. Signed, Unhappy in Pennsylvania. Dear Unhappy, it's important you recognize that you are married to an emotional abuser. He maintains his power in your relationship by eroding your sense of self-esteem. Discuss with a licensed mental health professional the treatment you have tolerated for the last 30 years and your desire to rebuild your shattered self-esteem. It may take time to accomplish, but it will be money well spent. At some point, you may ask your husband to join you, but don't expect him to automatically agree. Once you feel better about yourself, you can then make a well-thought-out decision about whether to continue being married to him. Dear Abby, I'm a 56-year-old man who has been with a great guy, age 50, for 20 years. We were married 2 years ago. He's a professor. I'm a clinician. We have spent the last 20 years building a beautiful life, advancing our careers, traveling to 80 countries, wining and dining in the best places in the world, and cultivating long-lasting friendships with people all over the planet. 5 years ago, I felt a sense of emptiness in spite of our happiness and talked to him about children. He was adamantly opposed. I let it go, but now that emptiness is tearing me up inside. I am at the point of giving up my life with him to have a child on my own via adoption or IVF with a surrogate. His biggest issue is how his comfortable life will be changed forever. My issue is getting those last few drops of unfulfilled happiness before it's too late. Please advise. Signed, Happy but Incomplete. Dear HBI, if your husband is steadfast that he doesn't want his lifestyle to change, he may not be taking into account that with you out of the picture, it will change regardless. And it isn't unheard of that someone who is fearful of the responsibility of raising a child can have a change of heart and fall in love with the little person after meeting him or her. If ever a couple could use marital counseling, it's the two of you, to help you determine whether a compromise can be reached. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.